Bigger Than the Wind by Jim Krepfel.
It's been 5 days since the wind took my dad. 5 days of huddling in the old school, trying to push the image out of my head, wondering if we can hang on until spring. I think about Mandy and hope she's safe in her cellar, bravely waiting it out, praying for her family. I should have insisted she come here. I should have made her. I think about Mandy all the time, because when I do, I don't hear the wind. My name is Caleb. I live in the plains in eastern Colorado, where weather plays a bigger role in your life than church or family. Summer can be bone dry for months, and then deluge for weeks. A winter snowstorm can dump 3 feet of snow in a night, stranding cattle and putting your family to ruin. And every autumn, we get windstorms, ripping out of the Rockies like angry gods and lasting for days. But never like this. This windstorm hasn't stopped in 58 days. It came on like army worms, slow and relentless. Strong autumn winds that got worse every day, grabbing at you and knocking you over. I first knew it was something unusual when Mandy and I were in the scoring tower next to the football field. We talked for the first time about maybe being together, and jumping in the car one day and leaving the plains for good. The winds started blowing in, like every fall morning, but they got fierce in a hurry. The metal tower started creaking, and before long we felt it bend and sway. Then all of a sudden, the whole tower lurched, throwing Mandy into me, and I saw the fear in her eyes. "Let's get out of here," I yelled, helping her up. We struggled down the thin metal ladder with the wind pulling at our clothes. The trees were thrashing behind us, and an aspen snapped in half. We made it back to her car and collapsed in the seats. People were able to move around town for a while, though it was a struggle and got worse every day. It wasn't long before the school closed and the store was empty. When none of the phones worked, we knew the cell tower was gone. "It's going to be a rough winter," Dad said as we were fitting out the cellar with water, canned food, and batteries. "Has it ever been like this?" I asked. He didn't say anything, and I knew that it hadn't. Then, on November 3rd, the first really big wind came, taking out trees and windows all over town. We all scrambled to find shelter. After that, you could hardly go outside, except in the late afternoon when it died down a little. I cried the day I helped Mandy try to find her dog. A lot of animals are just plain missing, and everyone knows the wind took them, but nobody says it out loud. Calling out didn't do any good, since even a dog couldn't hear over the wind. But Mandy yelled for Sierra as loud as she could. The wind was pushing her little Civic all over the streets and pelting us with branches, and it got too dangerous to be outside pretty quick. Mandy started crying when he had to give up, and I put my hand on her shoulder and just let it stay there, and touching her felt like the only steady thing in the world. Her parents went to Denver to buy supplies before the storm got really bad. Mandy hasn't heard from them since we lost the phones. I hope they didn't try to get back. Mandy asked me to stay with her, and I think about what that might have meant before the storm. I told her I would, but that's the night my dad decided we move into the school. It's one of the only buildings in town that might make it through the winter. 3 stories of big, red, 100-year-old blocks surrounded by oaks. When you walk through its imposing entrance and echoey halls, you know the town thought it had a future when they built it. There are 19 of us living at the school, including Mr. Jonas, who owns the bank. He comes up to the 3rd floor every day to survey things. He'll scan the town and surrounding fields, and then just stare at the bank building for the longest time, not saying anything, and I can see the muscles in his face get tenser and tenser. I can see the whole town from here, including Mandy's house, which is only half a block away. Street signs, roof shingles, lawn chairs, and anything else you can imagine blow through the schoolyard. Part of a sign blew by, and I recognized it. Sombrero Stables. The stables are 60 miles away. The wind would probably have to be twice as powerful to take the school down, but it's getting stronger, and some houses that looked pretty sturdy about a month ago don't look that way anymore. We watched the Wilson's house go down. and it's something I wished I'd never seen. First the roof blew off, then the whole house came apart in a matter of minutes, and while we desperately hoped otherwise, they were still in there. Mr. and Mrs. Wilson, Charlene, and little Danny, clinging to the beams and plumbing fixtures as the walls broke up around them. My dad couldn't help himself and dashed into the storm to help. He never made it across the street. The wind grabbed hold of him, and he was just gone. I struggled and cried while Mr. Jonas and two of the other men held me back. Then one by one, Mr. and Mrs. Wilson and both kids blew off into the wind, rolling away with the debris, screaming silently in the roar. None of us spoke for hours. Except Jimmy. "Do you ever feel like going outside?" he asks me when we're down in the locker room filling big plastic mayonnaise containers with water. "Don't talk like that."
"I can't help it. I'll be listening to the wind and start wondering what it would be like to walk right into it."
"Shut up," I say, with more anger in my voice than I mean to have.
"I wouldn't do it."
Jimmy looks hurt. He turns away, and I barely hear him over the wind.
"But it would be like flying."
And then I picture Mandy, ripped from the wreckage of her home, carried out into the plains, and I decide I have to get her. There's no way I'm going to let the wind take her, like it took the Wilsons. Like it took my dad. "I'm going to get Mandy," I tell Mr. Jonas when we get back upstairs. "She's just across the street. I'll crawl and set up ropes to bring her back." I'm not sure if it will work, but I know I'm resolved.
"You'll never make it," Mr. Jonas says, his jaw set hard. "It's only half a block. It might as well be halfway to Kansas. You don't even know if she's still there."
Mr. Jonas talks like he assumes everyone will do what he tells them to do. But there must be a look on my face that shows him it's no use trying to stop me, because he doesn't say anything more after that. He and Jimmy even help me get ready. I put on a thick leather jacket we find in an old lost and found box and a borrowed motorcycle helmet and goggles. We find a couple of ropes in the boiler room. In the afternoon, when the wind eases, we walk down to the big glass front doors, which are webbed with cracks but still intact. We tie one end of a rope around my waist and one end to the big radiator in the hallway. I shake their hands, and then the three of us force the door open enough for me to get through. I take a deep breath and push myself outside. The wind blasts me against the rough stone blocks of the school and holds me there. It's hard to catch my breath, and I have to hold the goggles onto my face. I ease down the wall, get on my stomach, and start crawling. The wind is tearing at my clothes, roaring all around me, and I thank God Jimmy thought of the cotton to put in my ears. I make my way through the schoolyard. Sticks, dirt, and even rocks fly into me. When I get near the street, I tie the rope around one of the oak trunks, now just a tall, jagged stump, and start the next rope. I crawl across the street, and a gust begins to lift me. I splay out, trying to lower my center of gravity. Wind is pouring under me, levitating me as if I were an airplane on a runway. I'm a gust away from being picked up and driven into a tree or building. I claw into the asphalt with my fingernails, trying to gain purchase and anchor myself to the ground. I let out my breath, trying to get flatter, heavier. I will myself into the pavement. The wind shifts a bit, and my body drops back to the ground. Only after I feel the street against the whole length of me do I dare to breathe again. When I've regained my breath, I start crawling again. I inch my way across the street and finally reach the first house on Mandy's block. The siding is shaking, pulling at its nails. Staying low, I move from house to house, scraping myself along the walls. And then, I'm there. Mandy's house. Her porch is gone, and the front door and all the windows are broken out. Inside, paper and clothes and broken picture frames are blowing everywhere. A mattress is caught in the window frame, flapping wildly. I set the rope as best I can, then make my way through the kitchen, which is even more chaotic. The cupboard doors are beating open and closed, and the floor is covered with broken glass. I pull away the table that's been blown against the basement door. The wind grabs it and thrusts it against the far wall. I force the door open, walk down the stairs, and I see her, sitting in a corner, staring at a Coleman lamp, rocking back and forth. She looks up, and I can't tell if she believes what she sees. I take off the helmet, and it takes her a minute to register that it's me.
What are you... How...
She stammers. Her voice is shaking. I came to get you, I say, but I barely hear myself because the adrenaline from my crawl and the sight of her still alive make my heart pound louder than the wind. Mandy is dumbstruck. Stuck in the well of a house that wasn't going to protect her much longer, I'm sure she thought she was going to die. I crawled from the school, and I rigged a rope so we can get back. We'll be safe there, I say, with as much assurance as I can. And she breaks down. I put my arm around her and let her cry. When she's done, she looks up at me, and her face is a mix of exhaustion, disbelief, and hope. And I know at that moment that we're going to get back to the school. We're going to make it until spring, no matter what. I know this more than anything I've known before. Know it for the both of us. And when the winds die, we'll leave the plains and go someplace else. Someplace with a future. Someplace where together, we'll be bigger than the wind.
Bigger Than the Wind was written by Jim Krepfel and read by David Gurney. Sound effect by Inspector J. Produced by Neil Mason.